I want to see the team have the kind of fight that they had in 2016, even if we shock the world. Shock the world!
Playing a Mexican team in the next round.
That's what I was about to say.
Powered it forward, Jack Price in goal.
And the Colorado Rapids, the team from the Rockies, have scaled their own mountain tonight. They are MLS Cup winners.
We'll give you the ball so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh. Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on the evening of Thursday, January 3rd, 2019. The Holding the High Line shutdown has ended. Rabbi Mark Goodman, how are you doing today, my friend? And more importantly, what comment do you have to make on the rumor I'm about to start that you are the favorite for the Manchester United manager opening?
It would be a good move. I'm coming off an undefeated season in U8 soccer. So, I mean, this is really, I guess we're U9s. But anyways, this is, you know, I'm at my peak of managerial prowess right now. I've really started to understand the tactics. I'm like 50% of the way through the basic certifications that come from the E level, the U.S. soccer, E license, you know, like I'm like really qualified. I'm totally there. I don't know, Matt. Do you think I can't even pronounce his name. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to keep the position? He seems like he's doing okay.
No, I think this is all the new coach bump. I think Man U needs a total retool in terms of the attitude of their players. I think Jose Mourinho was absolutely the cause. He was what was causing the cancer, but they still need to rip out all of the scar tissue. So I think they need to go with a different manager. I think there's two really obvious candidates. You know, as the champions teased in their in Bleacher Report's episode on Man U from this season, I think, you know, Zinedine Zidane is hanging out there, and I think he would absolutely have a whole bunch of cachet. And then if they wanted to rip him away from Spurs, just because I think after this season, they're probably, by the end of the season, they'll have peaked. Mauricio Pochettino, who's the guy at Atletico Madrid, whose name I can never
remember? Diego Simeone?
Simeone. I think he'd be another interesting candidate. But no, I think there's a bunch of really good quality candidates they're going to go through. And Mark, unfortunately, I think your resume, although you've done a good job with the development and the project of the Sandwich Dragons, I just think Man U's looking for somebody who's done it a little bit more consistently at the higher level.
I mean, I rode one really good player to a spectacular team. We're going to lose him next season, which, you know, brings to mind, you know, Atlanta United next year, who are going to be playing potentially. There's news today that Ezequiel Barco has hurt his knee. They're likely not going to have Miguel Almiron. You know, this is a team that's going to have to retool after losing a bunch of players, but they will have Pity Martinez for sure. But we're already in MLS news. When there's one last thing I wanted to say about non MLS news, which is, oh my God, Matt, how did you not lead with Christian Pulisic to Chelsea for $73 million. I mean, like, that's the big news here in Pennsylvania. What do you?
Okay, I mean, I think it's a good move. I am cautiously optimistic. I am cautiously optimistic about it. Just because I think Pulisic needs to re-earn his starting spot from Dortmund, you know, since he's on loan through the end of the 2018-2019 season. You know, I'm optimistic in the sense that this is probably going to be the biggest investment in terms of transfer fee, term of contract, and salary that Chelsea is spending on in this calendar year, certainly in this transfer window, unless they're buying Cristiano Ronaldo or something. So, you know, you don't drop, you know, £60 million on a guy and then give him a 5-year contract, increase his salary from a very good German team, you know, by a factor of 5 if that guy is not going to be a feature for you. I guess I'm just wondering, you know, Williams over 30 now. You know, Eden Hazard, you know, there's been rumblings about him wanting to go to La Liga and potential interest from Real Madrid. I guess I'm just wondering if, you know, if this move is now a domino that then creates an easier vacuum in which Pulisic steps in and has to be the starter just because, you know, Eden Hazard or Willian's gone. But, you know, I think it's a good move for him. And in particular, I have a number of very vivid memories, both with Americans and then with internationals in grad school, specifically referencing where people learned, particularly the Americans, got interested in soccer through playing FIFA. And then I mentioned a couple players who they knew. In this case, it was namely Drogba had just signed with Montreal Impact. So they're like, yeah, I play with Chelsea. There's this really good striker named Drogba. I'm like, you know, he plays in MLS now for Montreal Impact. And they're like, what? Yeah, you can watch him on ESPN on Saturday at like a reasonable hour, right, and everything. And that just completely blew their mind. Now there's people who are going to, you know, I would say, Chelsea's probably, you know, if you just picked FIFA players, like the club that they start playing with, Chelsea's probably easily top 20, probably top 10 in FIFA 2019 right now. And now that team is going to have a major American on there, where I think the only prior instance where you were really able to say that was maybe, you know, was maybe Clint Dempsey as the super sub striker for that 1 year that he was with Spurs. So I think it's a good move for Pulisic. I think it's a good move for Chelsea FC. I think it's a good move for American soccer as a whole. I think his success or failure could set a precedent for the future price negotiations and the credibility to which an American talent, say, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, etc., is viewed at, in the same way that there's a good precedent that American goalkeepers go over to Europe and dominate. I think Pulisic could be the start of a new trend where previously, you know, nobody's dropping 20 millions on an American anything that's not a goalkeeper in the Premier League.
All right. Well, that's been this edition of Holding the Highline with Rabbi and Red. Tune in next week, guys. It's been really fun.
No, we've got stuff to talk about, Mark. Let's get to it. No major news.
We did our banter about soccer.
Yeah, so no major news since last we had our podcast, folks. The Rapids have not signed any new players. Go two episodes ago if you need to catch up on what's going on with Kai Kamara, Keegan Rosenberry, etc. And then obviously when, you know, you were still in Mexico, Mark, and I was skiing up at Crested Butte and hanging out with the family, we ran your interview from this past May with Thron Taylor. But, you know, in typical Rapids Twitter fashion, Mark, we were looking for something to talk about, and then something happened, a bunch of people chimed in on it, you caught wind of it, and now it's an interesting topic that we have touched on in the past, but maybe has a new layer that is worth talking since, you know, we're the Rapids podcast that goes into nebulous weeds with a whole bunch of details. Why don't you walk us through what happened on Twitter and the actual topic that, you know, that's worth discussing at this point, albeit rehashing some old and painful storylines from the 2018 season.
Absolutely. So it's an interesting question that Colorado Rapids fans kind of had to wrestle with. A friend posted an article that came from online. And it was that the Colorado Rapids general manager, Porrick Smith, was interviewed on a podcast. And on the podcast, he was asked about kind of roster construction, leadership, things like that, of that nature. And his response was he said that the Colorado Rapids – struggled last year because they had, as he said, two top players, based on their CV, as he put it, who when they came in, there's no way they shouldn't be in the starting 11. They were better than the other guys on the team. But they didn't want to, quote, adhere to the standards that we put in place and the non-negotiables because they didn't want to do a certain things that we felt were fundamental to enable us to build a long-term sustainable success culture. I think that's a good place to kind of end quote there. So Porrick Smith basically admits that the Colorado Rapids missed on two players, at least in terms of how they fit into the club culture. Let me unpack that a little bit more by just going back and at least spilling the light on one of them in a clear way, and then we'll kind of Matt, I'll throw it to you to figure out who the second person is. But here's the deal. In November of 2017, Colorado, Pork Smith went out and got, at the kind of beginning of his responsibility for roster building, a player from Germany named Stefan Aigner. Aigner, 30-something winger with a track record of success in the Bundesliga and the two Bundesliga. He comes in, the Rapids then go out and hire Anthony Hudson, who comes in from the New Zealand national team. Anthony Hudson is a manager with a history of playing in a 5-3-2 formation, which involves wingbacks, but not wingers. Okay? All right. So it doesn't take 2 and 2 plus equals 5 or a math genius or any genius of any kind to figure out that the Colorado Rapids, Anthony Hudson turned to Stefan Aigner at the beginning of the season and said, "Hey, I know you're a winger, but we don't have wingers in this formation. I need you to play a different position, and here's what I need you to do it." And essentially what we learned in the first couple months of the season was Stefan Aigner didn't want to do it. And he had words with the manager sat him down, and after a couple weeks, he was toast. They just shipped him out of town, which blew a huge chunk of the salary budget on a player who really never had any function whatsoever in the team. Porksmith in this interview kind of admitted, like, they got a player who didn't fit the quote-unquote culture. In fact, in that interview, he said, "We had two players who didn't fit the culture." So the first question I have for you, Matt, is, one, which is the other player on the team from this last year that didn't fit the quote-unquote culture, in your opinion? Or who are the likely suspects? And two, who is responsible for this kind of decision? And say it a different way. Should you as a team play your best players and figure out how to use them as best as possible, culture of the club be damned, or was it a reasonable thing for the Colorado Rapids in 2018 to sit two very good players down who didn't fit into what the coach had in mind for the tactics and say, "You're our best players, but we're just not going to use you because we don't know what to do with you"? Go.
Well, I guess I'm a little surprised based on what, you know, you tagged, at Rapids96 podcast, our Twitter handle, by the way, in the actual, on Twitter saying that you were going to discuss it. And that was my introduction to the thread. I wanted to have, for the purpose of this podcast, as an organic of a conversation as possible. So I only skimmed the actual thread that you and a few other members of regulars of Rapids Twitter were discussing. So based on your talking, Mark, I'm a little bit surprised because I think it's pretty obvious that the second player has to be Yannick Bolli. And based on your conversations, it looks like you think that at least that's in doubt, or there's several suspects. Whereas, I'm thinking this is OJ, this is the OJ Simpson case. Like, there's one obvious suspect with an easy motive here, as opposed to this being, like Jack the Ripper or something like that. So I think it's Yannick Bolli. I think it's pretty obvious. You know, I've spoken with a couple of people, off the record that I think it's now pretty obvious that the Rapids didn't do as much homework as they probably should have on Yannick Bolli. I think they maybe rated the, Chinese second division a little bit higher in terms of what it would be transitioning to MLS and understanding, where he was from a fitness standpoint, and everything. So I think the homework wasn't completely done on Yannick Bolli, and it was a rushed move, albeit a move that, if the rumors are to be believed, he was their fifth or sixth option that they were looking through with all those other strikers, where there was, there's a rumor that the Rapids are in discussion with who in the middle of January, and then that scent goes quiet for another 3 or 4 days, and then somebody else pops up next week. Yannick Bolli was the fifth or the sixth guy after that, so they clearly didn't have a whole lot of time to try and sign him before the end of that particular window. So I think it's pretty obvious, it's pretty obvious that first one is Stefan Aigner. For me, I think it's pretty obvious that the next one after that is Yannick Bolli. Based on what Pork was saying, I just have a hard time seeing how, based on salary, based on culture based on it probably being an international player, who else you could say just was totally not interested in the culture. Say what you will about the poor season and, you know, the, you know, golden cone gifts that were some of the mistakes that Danny Wilson made leading up to a goal that the Rapids ultimately conceded. You can't say that he didn't completely fit the system or that he wasn't trying to fit into everything. He, you know, and if at the very least, based on the quote that you mentioned and what I saw from the thread, this wasn't somebody who had significant injury issues throughout the entire of the season, in which case that makes me believe that it would not have been a Danny Wilson. It would not have been a Johan Blomberg, you know, who had some decent looks when he was actually healthy. And I'd say the same thing of Skelton Gashi as well. To your second question of what do you do from a club standpoint of do you just, you know, do you collect the best players that you possibly can and then try and make that into something that works with 11 guys onto the field? Or do you build a system and then get distinct players who fit in as the puzzle piece into the missing hole that you have? And I think where Hudson probably realized in hindsight that he mismanaged it from a media standpoint and maybe also from a locker room standpoint of, you know, you're starting Jack McBean and Nicky Jackson up top with Yannick Bolli on the bench, maybe coming off. Stefan Eigner not even in the 18. You know, there, I think you brought it up, that 1-0 loss at Sporting Kansas City where Eigner didn't even travel with the team and Sam Hamilton sat on the bench, and you knew Sam Hamilton wasn't going to come into the game. What kind of a statement are you making to your star winger in terms of that, you know, that you are so low that we're going to put a 22-year-old who's not even going to play, we're not even going to have you travel because we don't want to spend the money on your ticket because that's how irrelevant you are to the squad. At the same time, the team was struggling, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. You know, I think it's a delicate balance that you have to manage from a man management standpoint. You know, if you just immediately give all the players a benefit of the doubt because they're your best option at a particular position, eventually you're ceding control of the locker room. And ultimately, at some level, that's going to lead to the inmates, you know, leading the asylum. And I don't know that that's a situation you want, you know, where you've got, you know, say in, maybe not so much now with Guillermo Barros-Skelota, where, you know, where Zlatan Ibrahimovic is having a blow-up at Sebastian Legette because he's not a world-class player, and then he just walks off the field and says, no, training's done. And, like, Siggy's supposed to try and corral Zlatan into staying in for training, and there's no way that Zlatan's going to listen to him. I don't think you could have had that. I think that there was a healthier medium between just starting Eigner and Bolli no matter what and what Hudson did. I think there's a median in there that you can manage. I think it's delicate, and I think ultimately Hudson's decision and Pork in complying with that ultimately and the decision to move Eigner in the summer and to not retain Yannick Bolli if he is the second player that Pork was referring to in the interview, that was a decision of we care more about the system and the long term, and we are going to be here longer than players who don't want to be here or players who don't fundamentally fit the system. That said, in my three questions, so last word on soccer, every single year we do previews of every team, their season in MLS, and it's always three questions for such and such team, such and such year, season. And one of my questions for Anthony Hudson and the Rapids in that preview going into the 2018 season was what role Stefan Eigner was going to be, because I don't think he was a wing back, or if he was going to be, he was going to be a significant defensive liability. He's not really a number 10 unless you want him to sort of roam from touchline to touchline. Would that have worked in a three-man, you know, central midfield role? Or would he have been an underneath striker? And resolving that in some capacity was going to be a critical part. And obviously it resolved in the fact that Stefan Eigner played only 11 minutes in one substitute appearance for the Rapids in 2019. Marcus, is it less obvious who that second player is? And how do you balance the I'm playing for my system as opposed to I'm putting the best 11 players I have on the field on the field?
I think the reason that I'm not sure it's Bolli is that there's a difference between the player was bad and the player didn't buy the formation and the way he was going to be used in the team, right? And I don't know whether Bolli was the former or the latter. There's a couple of other possible suspects. One is Joe Mason, who could have been bad, but he also could have come to the team and been told, hey, we want you to play striker in a 5-3-2, and he would have been like, nah, I don't really want to – that doesn't make sense for me. Another possibility is Marlon Hairston, who was asked to do certain things at wingback and to play wingback in a certain way that he just really never got comfortable with. Now, the reason that doesn't make a whole lot of sense is that Marlon Harrison's problems with the Rapids in 2018 probably started with injury and then never getting back into the club. He got like Wally Pipped at right back, essentially, which was he got hurt. They tried some other guys there. Then they changed formation on him, which changed his whole role at right back. Then he basically lost his job at right back because he wasn't the best option anymore as a defensively minded right back, which, you know, is a whole nother question. Another possibility, although unlikely, is Dylan Serna, because Dylan Serna has seemed to have been just fine with everybody, but, you know, it can't be great for him to have sat down. Eric Miller is a really good possibility, being that he is a really good defensive right back who, you know, was probably asked to play a different style maybe at the beginning of the season and then just basically said, I'm sorry, coach, I can't do that. I'd prefer if you trade me. Although the only reason that doesn't make sense is because he's a low paid player, you know, like he can't, he's not the kind of guy who could demand a trade. And then the last one is Jared Watts, who I don't think it takes a whole lot of sleuthing to figure out that when he left, he was pretty happy to have left. Like he didn't really want to be bench fodder anymore for the Colorado Rapids. That being said, you know, he went to Houston, he was bench fodder for them, and then his option wasn't exercised, and I don't know where he stands right now in MLS. By the way, speaking of former Rapids notes, I think the only player from the 2018 Rapids to have already landed a job was Caleb Calvert, who signed in USL the other day.
Well, Enzo Martinez is back with Charlotte Independence, and then Sam Hamilton signed with I can't remember if they're in Albuquerque or Santa Fe, the New Mexico USL.
I knew it was one of them southwestern teams, but very good. So, but this was, the Calvert news was just new, that's all. So, that's my scratch on that. But I think you bring up some good points when you get back to the question of, who's at fault. I think one of the things that, I noticed from the conversation on Twitter was that, Colorado Rapids fans are very quick to point fingers at Anthony Hudson and Porrick Smith for making bad decisions. And I think it's legitimate to point to the two of them and say, how did you guys get the quote unquote culture so wrong? How did you fail? How did you bring in Stefan Aigner plus another unknown player who were attitude problems? Probably Yannick Bolli. You're probably right. But let's say it's Aigner and Bolli. How did you guys, in the process of signing free agent players, look so much at tape and just not get the job interview right? You know, how did you not be able to get a character reference, or a letter of reference from their previous employer? I know I'm being a little bit, you know, literal human resources department for your local, you know, Fortune 500 company, but like you would think that, I mean, in the NFL, they talk a lot about, you know, interviews that they do with players and quote unquote character and so forth. But, and I'm not a big believer in that, but I do think, you know, they got a couple guys who clearly weren't team players. Are they, you know, is that unforeseeable or is that, you know, not doing due diligence? I don't know. I don't know. I think I would hope that both Hudson and Smith learned from the experience, that they realized that getting the locker room right is at least as important. And maybe, you know, the final thought on this for me is, one of my favorite comments about this was, I think it was Carter Hedrick who talked about how, on Twitter, who talked about how Jermaine Jones, who is certainly a head case, I mean, is absolutely a difficult personality. But when he came into Colorado, he came with a ton of fire, and he came with Tim Howard, you know, kind of in his corner, saying like, yo, we're two national team guys. We know what it takes to win. We are really motivated. We want to do something this year. And that kind of fire in the belly was missing from the team. And it feels like maybe last year the team lacked the guy with the fire in the belly who could charge up the locker room. And instead they got the guy who bitched and moaned about his responsibilities or, you know, the formation or not getting into the starting 11 right off the first day.
Yeah, no, I think you bring up a bunch of really good points, Mark. I think I don't know that it's so much film study that you get an idea of somebody's personality. I remember an interview that I saw. It was an ESPN E60 something or other, and it was with Marcellus Wiley, who was a defensive end for the Dallas Cowboys for an extended period of time. And the preview was specifically on the NFL draft. I apologize, listeners, for bringing up Hand Egg. But he was talking, he didn't say the team, but he said that, you know, they went through and they asked me specific questions about girlfriends I had in high school and about friends who were not athletes or on the football team when I was in college. I've had a couple of instances in my grad school experience where I had some very, very limited interactions with some federal employees who were doing background checks for a couple of friends who were looking at positions in the federal government, either EPA or DOE for the most part. And they ask pretty extensive national security, you know, does someone get loose-lipped when they are intoxicated, for example? How does this person feel about patriotism or, you know, bipartisan politics and things like that? And, you know, those, both of those entities do an extensive amount of detail. You know, I question, did Porrick Smith, did they go find Stefan Eigner's old youth coach from 1860 Munich? Did they ask any of his previous coaches or anything? Did they find somebody who spoke Russian to find the team, you know, somebody who, Yannick Bolli played for? You know, if I'm thinking about going after an MLS free agent who maybe comes with some baggage, for example, you know, I'm going to try and contact, you know, a player from their last locker room. I'm going to try and contact, one of their former coaches. You know, I'm going to try and get an understanding of their personality. And obviously, you know, when, you know, the Rapids already had that, with Jermaine Jones coming in and the cachet that he had, as you just mentioned. But, you know, if the Rapids were to go and try and get, if they were to go and try and get Penny Failhaber, for example, who's still in negotiations with LAFC, like, you better damn well bet that Porrick Smith or somebody is going to try and find someone to talk to who had inside information on what was going on in the LAFC locker room. They're going to, you know, they're definitely going to hit up Diego Rubio, who overlapped with him at Sporting Kansas City, and said, hey, what's Penny Failhaber like in the locker room? How does he interact in training when you've gone on a 3-game losing streak? Is he part of the problem? Is he part of the solution? I question how much of that they did given the personality issues. I think the other thing that you mentioned, you know, with, Eigner being a specific type of player with a specific role, and then Porrick deciding to hire a coach whose system inherently did not include that role. And I would include the 4-4, I would question where Eigner fits in the 4-4-2 diamond as well, not just the 3-5-2. But, you know, I think at that point, you as the interviewer have to understand bringing in a coach and the assets that you have and how that's going to interact. You know, if you have the next head coach, permanent head coach at Manchester United, I don't know that that person can just say, I have no interest in Romelu Lukaku. We're not going to play, you know, we're going to play with a false nine. Or my system doesn't have a true number eight. I don't see how Paul Pogba fits in my room. That can be the answer to the question. You can hire a manager who that's their answer, but then you have to understand that manager is coming in, and if you're trying to move those two assets, you're not going to get market value for them. So, you know, after Eigner gated officially blown over, I remember having this conversation after training one day, and that was the day that you and I were both there, Mark. I think that was right before the World Cup started. We asked Tim Howard about Eigner gate. We asked Tommy Smith about Eigner gate. They both gave very generic, similar answers that almost seemed that like the PR team came on and said, everybody, this is the public message that we're sending out if anybody asks about Eigner. I'm not accusing the Rapids of doing that, but, you know, Howard and Tommy Smith are both very media savvy. They're both very articulate, and they said very similar things. That could be that they were told to do that. That could be that they had a conversation about it and they just happened to be thinking the same thing because of that conversation. That could be because that is actually what happened. We'll never know the complete answer to that question because Last Word on Sports is not funding me a round trip ticket to Germany anytime soon. So, But I genuinely do have to wonder, you know, if that was the case, what was the conversation, if it brought up at all, when Hudson was interviewing for the job? Hey, we have this player like Stefan Aigner. Have you watched film of him? What do you think of him? Given that he's a winger and you don't play with traditional wingers, where do you see him fit into the system? And when I asked Hudson about that, saying, you know, do you think any of the tactical discontinuities was causing that? And he said, no, that wasn't a factor at all. I'd have to actually pull up the exact quote, but he said it wasn't a factor. And he said, I expressed a willingness with Stefan to be flexible tactically, which, if you know my history, is not something that I'm willing to do for just about any player. And he still seemed disinterested. Were there conversations with Aigner at that point, prior to seeing the 4-4-2 diamond in league play, that was on the table potentially? How much flexibility did Hudson actually have? Is that something that he's making up? Is that something that he's exaggerating because of his perspective of the truth? That's one big question that, independent of all the other personality issues, we never really got any clarity from, and nobody from the Rapids, particularly on the record when I've asked the big people, have come up with a really good answer for that. Well, okay, Hudson, you were so dogged on the 3-5-2 formation. What were you looking to change that Aigner was going to, you know, really fit into? It clearly wasn't going to be the 4-4-2 diamond. Otherwise, you would have done it a little bit earlier. Okay, Pork, you know, what were you thinking? What were those conversations like? It makes me almost think that that conversation wasn't there, or they had an oversimplified answer to it that was ultimately led to the conversation, real or perceived, that Hudson said, hey, Aigner, I know you do X, Y, and Z. I need you to do A, B, and C. And then Aigner says, no, I'm not going to do that. Screaming match, discontinuity. I'm standing there. Aigner's walking off the field. And then Hudson says afterwards, no, Aigner was there for training. He just had to skip out earlier.
Right. So last thought on this to close it out is I think it's a very likely possibility. If you look at the players that Torek Smith has been involved in acquiring over the last previous two seasons versus this season, it's possible that he has learned his lesson with regards to the ability to vet players from very, very far away. So you saw targets last year who were in Scandinavia and in Eastern Europe and in Russia and in China. Some of them were landed and some of them weren't. You know, you go back, you know, before that, and you get guys like Bismarck Aje Nana Boateng, a long, long name. You get targets like the player whose name escapes me, who was out of the Right to Dream Academy, and he was Gilbert something or other, from, he was a Ghanaian, I think. And he played in Europe, but like, they were scouting guys who, you know, it was really hard to get a book on. And this year, who are the Rapids, you know, current offseason acquisitions? Kai Kamara, Diego Rubio, Nicholas Mezquita, right? It takes a couple phone calls around the league to find out what kind of locker room presences are those guys. You know, they're familiar with Major League Soccer. So you don't have to deal with the question of how will they adjust to all the travel in North America? How will they adjust to the culture in Major League Soccer? Like, they've already been to Commerce City. Like, they know what's going on. So, like, you know, I feel good about that, but I also feel like it's kind of a bummer that our general manager took a little bit of time to come around on the learning curve and was, you know, throwing $500,000 at teams all over the world or more to acquire players who, you know, inevitably didn't necessarily fit in super well. But, you know, maybe we're learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if it actually happened, but I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for the conversation between Pork Smith, Anthony Hudson, and Greg Berhalter asking him about Kai Kamara and Pipa Higuain and their blow up after he left the crew, so that, you know, it was something off the record that they totally could have done. I would love to hear what Greg Berhalter's blunt, honest opinion about all of
absolutely.
That was.
That'll be the first chapter in the book that I write if I can ever get those interviews locked down.
Yeah, I guess the one thing that I'll say, I wrote down the list, you know, I don't know that, I still think that it's most probably Yannick Bolli. Joe Mason could make a little bit more sense, but his salary just wasn't that high, and ultimately, you know, he was on a loan deal, so worst case scenario, the Rapids were just gonna let that loan expire, and, you know, if indeed he wasn't really a good fit, he also had injury issues. If I'm remembering correctly, he had 3 goals in 800 minutes, which for the entire Rapids season, was the best goals per 90 of anybody on the team, if I'm not mistaken. So if he really wasn't that much of a good fit, he was pretty darn good, you know, sitting underneath and finding the space that Dominic Badji ultimately created to score 3 goals. I do think you might have a little bit of an argument on Marlon Hairston there, Mark, just because of seeing it seem like pretty obvious. If I wanted to start a rile up with Rapids Twitter in 2015, 2016, that like universally people would have opinions on, nobody would be in agreement, and there'd be a whole bunch of people on one side, a whole bunch of people on the other, and nobody in the middle whatsoever, that question would be, what's the best position for Marlon Hairston? And I kind of thought going into this season that right wing back would be the perfect melding between what he wants to do offensively and what he proved under Pablo Mastroianni that he could have done defensively. I still don't know, based on Porik's statement, that makes very good sense, given that, you know, everybody other than Joe Mason and the two candidates who we've singled out were all budget players. But that systematically, I think, makes a little bit more sense. I don't remember offhand actually asking, I don't remember a distinct quote that stood out to me, positive or negative or that's interesting, in terms of asking Marlon about his position change going into it and how he felt about it. I have to go back and, you know, listen to my audio finals from training and everything, but, you know, Hudson came in, it seemed pretty clearly, I play with wingbacks, and I think Marlon Hairston has potential to be one of the best right wingbacks in all of MLS. So maybe that was just another case of, hey, Marlon, we're going to have you do this specific role, and, you know, either he wasn't interested, or, you know, it never really stuck. Let's move on, Mark, to Ask HTHL. We had a very long holiday email from one of our friends and listeners, David Malenfant. He had a bunch of questions that I kind of answered back and forth, and he had one that was kind of just completely out there that we've never really talked about on the show. I'm not sure that we've ever spoken about this personally off air, that I think is an interesting conversation, that at the same time, there is no clear way to get a definitive answer, which means, of course, it has to be podcast material. And that question that David asked was about the caliber of MLS teams and MLS players compared to Europe, specifically looking at the FA, in England. So if we were to drop every single MLS team into the FA and then, you know, let limit as, you know, FIFA simulation goes to infinity, where would everybody fall in? I remember a distinct quote from his last year in MLS. David Beckham said that 2012 LA Galaxy team would finish just below mid-table. At the same time, I've heard other people who say, you know, with good authority, that MLS is about on par based on money and performance and players getting called up internationally to the English Championship. Mark, your thoughts on MLS as a league compared to the various tiers within the Football League? Where would individual teams slot out? And if we randomly dropped the Rapids in FIFA Manager into the FA, you know, how long would it take for them to get relegated out of the Football League?
All right. Let's take the class of the league. Where would Atlanta United be in the Premier League right now? Would they be in the top six? Probably not. That's a little bit high, because those are, you know, if you watch a lot of English Premier League football, as many soccer fans do at this time of year, you see the speed of the game and the absolute flawlessness of every single player. And you say, all right, MLS players are close, but not quite at that level. So I'd have to say that, I agree with, wasn't Zlatan. Who was it? Beckham?
David Beckham, who said the 2012 LA Galaxy would be
I'd say
table.
That the best team in Major League Soccer every season is about what Beckham says, which is a solid mid-table team, right? Like, I think Atlanta United versus Crystal Palace or Brighton or Newcastle, who are currently the mid-table teams in the EPL, would be a fair comparison. I think some of the other top four, top six teams in the league, like Red Bull, Seattle, Portland, SKC, they'd fit close to there or towards the bottom of the table. And then basically the rest would, be scattered throughout the championship, with the weakest teams in MLS fiddling out at the bottom of the championship and maybe the top of League One. I think the Colorado Rapids would do a very, very good job of punching their way out of League One and right back into the championship for the 2019-2020 season. They'd be like Sunderland Till I Die in reverse, hopefully. Which, by the way, if you guys haven't seen it, is an absolutely worthwhile watch on Netflix. And if you don't have Netflix, it's worth stealing your mom's password and borrowing anyways. It's a really enjoyable, even if you know what happens with Sunderland. It is, although for me, it was, mildly traumatic because, you know, the big moments in there are to have dramatic press conferences where the coaches are talking about the terrible losing streak they're on, and you know he's about to get fired, and they play dramatic music in the background, and you hear the click of the cameras and the whir of the elevator, and all I can think to myself is, oh my god, I've literally been in that actual room having this actual conversation with the Colorado Rapids. I mean, I remember interviewing Pablo Mastroeni and having him get fired 3 weeks later. And having the and interviewing him in the hallway at Dixon, thinking to myself, like, I don't know if he's going to be here much longer. I'm really enjoying interviewing him, and God, is he dreamy to look at, but I think he's going to get fired. By the way, every time I interviewed Pablo, all I could think to myself was, I'm really enjoying interviewing him, and man, this is a good-looking man. He's a good-looking man. Anyways. All right, Matt, your thoughts. English Championship, English Premier League, League Four, you know, non-league Southern Division semi-pro. Where are we at?
Well, I definitely think that the Rapids are above, you know, they're above the non-league teams that have like 100 people and like they can't even sell beer or anything like that. Where I struggle with this question, I've heard this from a number of different people, international and domestic. I remember a distinct quote from the interview that we featured on this podcast, with Johan Blomberg. And I was going through his time in Sweden, in particular, I think, the 3 years that he spent at AIK, which, if you know anything about the Swedish first division, it's pretty much AIK, Hammarby, and then, Malmo, where Zlatan Ibrahimovic, spent his youth career, and then he went back there to resurrect the club. Those are kind of the three big powers, and it's pretty much one of those three is gonna win the league. It's gonna take a couple major upsets for one of those to not win, whatever the Swedish Cup is named, and then it's gonna be those guys, probably getting destroyed in the Champions League, group stage game, and then maybe one of them makes a run, in the Europa League. And so I was asking him about the quality of players, in particular looking at, you know, the quality of player that's coming out of Sweden, the Europeans who are there, so the internationals, and then the domestic players, MLS vis-a-vis the Swedish first division. And he said they're about on par, but MLS has higher highs and has lower lows. You know, David Villa is not going to play in Sweden. Sebastian Giovinco is not going to play in Sweden. Makes Zlatan Ibrahimovic born in any other country in the world, he's not going back to play in Sweden. There are, because of the money that's available, because of the quality of living, because of the aura that America is to a lot of people outside of America, the current state of our politics be damned, is still a shiny city on a hill. Zlatan Ibrahimovic's family was probably so pumped to get out of Manchester and be living in sunny, California every single day. There's a team in Florida. There's two teams in New York. There's soon going to be another team in Florida. There is an appeal from a lifestyle standpoint, from a quality of living standpoint, from financial opportunities, from opportunities outside of and after soccer that America has that so many other leagues and so many other countries in the world do not have, to where they are able to get Wayne Rooney, where, you know, outside of three other leagues outside of the Premier League in Europe, Wayne Rooney wasn't going to anywhere. At the same time, you have some guys who just graduated college who are making $60,000 a year playing in the league who, you know, would probably be bench League One players, maybe regulars in League Two, possibly non-league level, who, if you put them, you know, in a situation where they have to play in the English Premier League, are going to get completely destroyed. So as much as an Atlanta United is going to have Miguel Almiron, who would be one of the better number 10s in the league, Jose Martinez, who I think could easily get 10 goals in the league, we could throw in Julian Gressel, who I think would be an excellent player. You know, I think of Jeff Lorenowitz is probably a good comparison to, say, Danny Williams with Bolton, for example. At the same time, you just can't compare if Daniel Starez has to go up and defend, you know, Anthony Martial on a week-in and week-out basis. If you've got Steve Clark, who's got to make saves, you know, against Sergio Aguero, for example. So I have trouble rationalizing that question, because at the same time that I'm sure David Beckham, Robbie Keane, and Landon Donovan could score against basically anybody but the Invincibles in their prime, at the same time, like, I just wonder, like, you know, Sean Franklin at the Etihad, I don't know how I feel about that. You know, Omar Gonzalez ball watching when he's got to play Romelu Lukaku. We saw how that worked out in the World Cup. You think that's going to be any better when it's, you know, when he has to play that on a weekly basis? So I just struggle to answer that, because I think the peaks of what MLS is capable of are, you know, the top 1 to 4 roster spots on some MLS teams can compete with some of the best leagues in the world. Maybe you strike lightning and one of those teams is able to get into Champions League. At the same time, you know, the bottom third of most MLS rosters, you know, would, you know, they'd be in Jose Altidore's position, where they're effectively getting loaned down to the U23s or the reserve squad. You know, to take Crystal Palace and give them, you know, the bottom third of Atlanta United's roster, that's just going to move out to the bottom of the Crystal Palace roster. None of those guys are cracking the 18 on the regular basis. At the same time, I'd love to see Wilfred Zaha on the wing cutting inside to find Miguel Almiron or Jose Martinez. So, you know, I realize this is purely an academic conversation, but I struggle with how to rationalize that, just given the disparity between, you know, the multi-million dollar DPs and, you know, the players who, you know, are making about the same, you know, are making about the same amount of money as if they had just gone in and gotten a job in whatever they majored in college.
Yep. All right.
Let's move on. This was going to be our banter topic, Mark. So, I have a good, coworker who's originally from New Jersey, who was a New York Red Bull season ticket holder for a number of years, including, the Bradley Wright Phillips, the end of the Thierry Henry era. I believe when they won, the Supporters Shield in Mike Petke's last year. And we got into a conversation. He had made a friend, through trivia, who is an Atlanta United fan, who is the stereotype. Like, I told him, this is what Atlanta United Twitter is like. And then he came back to me the next Monday and he said, Matt, I met an Atlanta United fan and he's exactly like what you told me about. And so we got to talking about disparity in terms of fans and some of their teams spoiling them, as opposed to some of their teams, you know, absolutely breaking their heart. And considering, you know, we're in America, where, you know, potentially you have a team for all four major sports. You know, if you're a Denver sports fan, you have the Rapids in addition to the Broncos, the Rockies, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas, you know, in England, you know, it's Leicester City and then that's it, unless maybe you're a rugby fan. So your highs are even higher because you only have one team to pour your heart out into, and your lows are even lower because you only have one team to pour your heart out to. Do we give an Atlanta United fan a pass for the fact that their MLS expansion team was effectively born on third base, but their fan base, to a certain extent, you could say, acts like they hit a triple because of the history of Atlanta sports, of what the Falcons have been, the fact that the Thrashers move, the Atlanta Hawks are never really relevant. You know, does my friend who's a New York Red Bull supporter, who's still waiting for their first MLS Cup, do we give him less sympathy because he is also a Giants and Yankees fan and has witnessed dynasties of both of those teams in his lifetime? Is a New England Revolution season ticket holder who has been there since 96, do we give them sympathy for being 0-5 in MLS Cup finals, even though that fan also has Tom Brady and the New England Patriots? The Boston Red Sox just won another World Series. The Bruins have won a cup this century. How do you rationalize the cross sports of a feeling sympathy for a fan as opposed to giving a fan another crap when correcting for the fact that maybe their entire sports experience is absolutely garbage, even if one team is really, really good, and also bearing that in the context of the fact that they might have a team who is their third choice team in their city, but is really, really good, but the team that they absolutely love is terrible. How do you make sense of
that? I mean, this is like one of those, you gave a very, like, complicated, philosophical, deeply, you know, deeply thought through, version of like an entire hour on your local sports radio channel, right? Like, when are bandwagon fans? When are fans legitimate? You know, what kind of fans are absolute garbage that we cannot respect? I guess for me, overwhelmingly, part of this probably comes from being like an ordained rabbi, which is life's short, man. Just enjoy stuff and don't get caught up in it. Don't, I mean, there are people in the world who you eye roll so hard that you literally give yourself a migraine when you see their car on the highway, right? The guy with the Dallas Cowboys bumper sticker and the
New York Yankees license plate and the Los Angeles Lakers jersey. Right.
Now, if you grew up in Montana, that's kind of understandable. Like, you don't have any professional teams, and so you watch what's on TV. I also think, like, there's another perspective, which is, and I will defend this guy a little bit, the person who has a favorite player, and they will root for that favorite player. You know, like the guy who said, I'm a Wizards fan now that MJ is on the Wizards, or the guy who has followed LeBron to every team that he's been with, and you just root for – you really root for LeBron, which is – I mean, that's a legitimate, okay perspective. You're a sports fan. You don't root for a team. You root for a guy. I get it. Like, life's short. You know, root for your team. I think that the standing on third base – you know, acting like you got a triple thing with Atlanta United is a separate question that's also complicated. And the question there is Atlanta United legitimately, are you Atlanta United fans just what happens in MLS 3.0? That like you build this spectacular new stadium, you have an expansion team, you splash a lot of money on some fancy new players, and 50,000 people show up every week? Because like Minnesota basically did that too. Without being good, you know, they get great attendance without even being very good at soccer. But like you said it, like Atlanta Falcons didn't succeed that way. The Atlanta Braves have spent the better part of the last 15 years ruining their fan base. So, I think it's okay to be an Atlanta fan. And I think it's okay to be a nouveau riche, you know, we did it. I'm the biggest Atlanta United fan in the world for the last 18 months. I think that's okay. I think it's okay to root for who you like to root for. You know, I'll say the most heretical thing, which is I think it's okay to change teams in your lifetime too, hypothetically. You know, soccer teams are very difficult, especially for Americans, but like, okay. Last thought on this. I think Coloradans should appreciate this. If you are a native Coloradan who is of a certain age, meaning 45 or above, you grew up listening to the Los Angeles Dodgers on the radio when you were a kid because there were no Colorado Rockies, right? Is it appropriate to have kept the Los Angeles Dodgers or the Chicago Cubs for a lot of people as your favorite National League team, even though the Rockies came in? The answer for a lot of people is, yeah, it's okay. Like, you grew up with this team and they stay with you. For others, they switch to the Rockies. And if the Rockies either move out of town or are crap for 20 years, it's okay to hypothetically switch to another team. Like, they don't owe you nothing, man. You get to spend your money how you want. Life is short. Matt is shaking his head.
Utter blasphemy, Mark Goodman. You do not give up on your team. Whatever thing that brought you to that, you live and you die with that team. And ultimately, when they finally win something, you will be vindicated in their success. You don't get to claim suffering with the Chicago Cubs for 108 years if you just started following them in 2014. So I disagree with you on that front. I think there are certain life events that can cause you to change teams. You know, I would think if you ever had a kid, for example, I think of Bill Walton, for example. His son, Luke Walton, who's now the coach of the Lakers, he only played professionally for the Lakers. You know, so I think of him who, you know, spent some time and won a ring with the Celtics, where, you know, it's okay for you. It's, I would, you know, forgive him for rooting for what used to be his enemy because his team, you know, because his son plays for that. I would think, you know, you know, had Columbus Crew left for Austin, I could totally see fans, you know, giving up the Crew and moving on to something else, for example. So I think, you know, it has to be a key event, either for you personally in your life or some significant event that changed the dynamic of the sport that causes you to give them up or to move, for example. So I don't ascribe to the changing teams in any way, shape, or form. You know, there is no college sports, there's no college football team that I'm going to obsessively and unhealthily care about as much as the Miami Hurricanes, and that is never going to change. And Miami could never win another national championship or never beat FSU ever again, and that's not going to change. I would say I would almost do like a power rankings in terms of, you know, your fifth favorite team in your city being really, really being a dynasty could cancel out your favorite team being absolutely terrible. But I do think ultimately, you know, one of the other sports podcasts that I listen to has a philosophy that ultimately sports fandom is really you just rooting for, you hoping and waiting for these iconic once in a generation moments and then making other friends and then having similar moments for that. So I have a really, really good friend from college who's originally from the Washington, D.C. area, and his favorite sports team, outside of his obvious college affiliations to the Hurricanes, are the Washington Capitals. His uncle had season tickets for the Caps for a number of years. Like, he had a jersey for every single birthday and everything. He lived and died with them. For those of you who don't pay attention to hockey, the Capitals and Alexander Ovechkin, won the Stanley Cup, this past, June. They defeated the Vegas Golden Knights, in five games in the Stanley Cup Finals. And I was so happy for him that he finally got to have that moment, go to the parade, get the Stanley Cup t-shirt and everything, that where, like, he has that thing to where the Capitals could break his heart for the rest of his lifetime, but he can live in peace because of this emotional entity that he's poured his heart out into has, you know, that finally manifested itself into something positive that he now can remember, that he's going to tell his kids about, he's going to tell his grandkids about. You know, like, Alexander Ovechkin is forever going to be a legend in the Washington, in the Washington, D.C. area. And, you know, he's going to have that moment of them lifting the cup and beating the Golden Knights in the finals. So, you know, I think we can have sympathy for other fans. I personally believe that I can have sympathy for an Atlanta sports fan who died with the Falcons after 28-3, that they finally got a championship. At the same time, I don't think that we should judge fans for when they jump on a bandwagon. They should be judged for when they jump off the bandwagon. You know, even if Atlanta didn't win anything this year, let's throw in Minnesota, who had another disappointing season in their second year in MLS. They've only existed for 2 years. You know, you need 5 years, probably a decade, in order to have a better understanding of how that fandom is going to come about. And the shiny and new in anything is always going to be extremely popular. FC Cincinnati is going to absolutely be lit in 2019, no matter how good the team has been. And the fact is, they were a really good USL team. And, you know, I don't think we should judge a fan. We shouldn't judge them for saying, oh, you're just jumping on them because they're really, really good, because the team hasn't existed. Now, you know, if they have, you know, 4 or 5 years, they end up missing the playoffs and they almost win the wooden spoon, you know, end up twice, and they end up spending a whole bunch of money in their mid-table, and then their coach craps out, and then Stefan Aigner comes in and completely blows up their locker room, and then they all cancel their season tickets. Okay, then we can say, were you just there because it was cool? Were you just there because you wanted the USL team to come into MLS? Or, you know, the suffering guy who's obsessing about the littlest minor quote that the general manager says a decade from now and dissecting it, and then ultimately listening to a podcast that spends an hour dissecting that, I think we have to give that guy credit. I think we have to give every single member of C38 who held up one of those tombstone TIFOs a tremendous amount of credit for what they have suffered through in the 2018 season and what they've suffered through for the rest of it. And no matter how many tickets you're buying or season tickets are there, you know, if your butt is in your seat at 7 p.m. on March 3rd, 2019, or excuse me, 4 p.m., on March 3rd, 2019 against the Portland Timbers. You know, you have street cred with us. You have street cred with me. You have street cred with Mark. You are a part of this community, and we know you're never going to go away. Richard Terry had a really good comment when I was watching a Rapids game with him, and it was going south. It was an away game. I don't even remember. And I turned to him, and I said, Richard, honestly, why do we care about this team? Why do we watch them? And he said, because I'm from Colorado, because I'm from Denver, because I love soccer, and all of my other friends who all say that all watch the Rapids. And I'm going to be here and I'm going to be doing this whether they win 50 MLS Cups in my lifetime, whether they never win another MLS Cup. And there's going to come a point, even if it's complete random chance and, you know, with a completely defensive structure and nicking a goal late and hashtag keep fighting, eventually there's going to be a time where the Rapids win a second MLS Cup. And then that's going to make all of these suffering and all of this pain absolutely worth it. And I'm okay with that as long as there's beer and I get to hang out with my mates and watch this crap soccer team.
Well said.
Okay, Mark, I guess we'll be doing a full preview of the Rapid situation with the MLS Super Draft next week, folks. So I mentioned that's going to be a week from today if you're listening on January the 4th. Mark, are there any previous little hot takes or little nuggets you want to give on the Super Draft, or shall we get
real quick? There's been a little bit of chatter amongst MLS folks about the next upcoming homegrown signings, and Sam Rabin, who played for the Academy team and the Rapids U23 PDL team, finished his season this last year with Wake Forest, and I think it's possible, I'd say odds are 50-50, that he gets a homegrown signing in the next couple weeks. One of the reasons that was brought up and that I mentioned it in conjunction with the MLS Combine and the MLS Draft is that he was not offered a spot in the Combine despite being generally ranked amongst the top 100 college players this year. So you don't invite a guy to the Combine if you think that his team is going to likely sign him. So that's one thing that's notable. Another thing to note is the Rapids currently have 23 players under contract. They are pretty full at forward. They're basically too deep across the back line. It's the midfield that opens a lot of questions. Currently they have Mesquita, Serna, Gashi, Acosta, Boateng, Blomberg, Price, and Bassett at midfield. So you could say that that's two-ish deep at every position. But so you can make a couple, and then they're full at goalkeeper. And
who's the second left back on your depth chart right
Sam
now?
Vines, which is a,
who's your first?
Declan Wynn.
Okay. I guess I was thinking about, I was thinking of Wynn as a center back for some reason. Okay.
He played more on the right left, but I remember at the beginning of the season, he played on the left and he had played some left back in the past. So you could make the argument that we have absolutely no left back, but getting back to the original point, which is the Super Draft, where are the Rapids likely to go for Super Draft? As always, with every professional sport, you've got two ways of going, which is you take the best player on the board, option A, or option B, you look for players in the position that you need them in. Right now, I think the Rapids are looking at potentially maybe wanting some more depth in the midfield, particularly guys who might be defensive midfielders. It's very, very difficult to find an attacking mid who is going to be that number 10 out of the Super Draft. It's not even worth it, to be honest. You probably want a jack-of-all-trades fill-in guy who's either a midfielder or who can play at fullback. If you're thinking that maybe Marlon Hairston or Dylan Serna or Johan Blomberg aren't going to be around very long, then maybe you're looking to replace them. And Matt, to your point, maybe you want to fill in at left back, although the Rapids have not had a lot of luck drafting at left back. The last time they did it was Liam Callahan, who they drafted 2 years ago, first round in the 2017 Super Draft, and then brought in to trial. He's currently playing, I kid you not, I just saw this today,
in the indoor league,
the Arena Soccer League, for Utica, New York. Wow, it's good that you knew that. That's impressive that we're both such dorks that way. So that's only my thought, which is, you know, you might want to go with best player on the board. You might want to go defensive midfielder. You might want to fill in at fullback if you can find a talented player. We'll see what the Rapids get. Any thoughts?
No, I agree with you. I think typically you're looking at it, if this draft is any like the previous draft classes that you've seen, you know, there's 3 to 4, you know, maybe at the most 5 or 6 guys who are absolute locks where you know that they have talent to play at the MLS level. Those are normally guys who are getting the Generation Adidas contracts, with those offers. So the Rapids aren't in that situation with their earliest pick being in the first round, 15th. Overall, and then there's maybe 10 to 15 guys who can fill in and do a job for you in that first year. After that, it's you're looking for diamonds in the rough. For every fourth round Dominic Baggi or Nicky Jackson, you know, there's 10 guys who get drafted and a month later are nowhere to be found and are never heard from again. You know, I'm of the belief, Mark, especially if you have a position, if you have a draft pick in that spot, in that initial portion of, you know, that there is MLS caliber talent, you take the best player available no matter what. I remember, the closest thing to a player really falling out of the draft was this, little guy named Christian Roldan, who was falling and falling and falling, and everybody thought there was something wrong with him, and Seattle Sounders took him, and it was like, well, he'll never actually play because the Sounders are good, are in win now mode. Christian Roldan, probably going to be in the conversation for the U.S. men's national team for the Gold Cup coming up this year. So, I would take the best player available, regardless of position, maybe not goalkeeper, given their situation, at the number 15 spot. And then after that, I think you're going for fit. Given where you just said that the Rapids were, in terms of their depth chart and everything, I think anybody who gets signed from this draft, there's at least a 50-50 chance that they're spending a good portion of their time down in the Springs in 2019 with the Colorado Springs Switchbacks. So I would say, you know, find a guy who you think has some talent, who needs a little bit of work, who you think could be decent for you in 2020, who you think could be a regular contributor for you in 2021, or after that. I think that's what you're looking for, similar to how it took a couple years for Dominic Baggi to fit in, maybe somebody a little bit less than what Nicky Jackson was able to provide for you this year. I think that's what the Rapids will probably do with their second, third, and fourth pick overall. Just pick somebody you think fits the system. Maybe that's a number 6. Maybe that's an underneath striker. Maybe that's a center back who's really good at, you know, pinging a ball into the midfield to get the offense started. Get that guy and then have them replicate that at the USL level. See if they can upgrade that to the MLS level come 2020, 2021.
Hang on. Two thoughts for those of you who might be watching the Combine this weekend, which I highly recommend. It's a lot of fun. For Coloradans who want something to watch, there's two players that you might want to keep your eye on. Andre Shinyashiki, of course, striker, 28 goals for Denver University this year, 5 hat tricks this last season. If you didn't get to see him when he was out at DU, you should watch him on TV. He'll be really fun. He's projected to go in the top 10 of the MLS Super Draft almost for sure. Not a Colorado native, born in Brazil, but basically an adopted Coloradan. So keep an eye on him. And the other guy to watch is Colorado native Griffin Dorsey, who I think played for Real Colorado. That means he doesn't have a Colorado Rapids Academy tag on him. He played for Indiana. He is a U.S. U-20 national player. He played for the Rapids in their U-23 team, but that doesn't give them rights to him. He's kind of slight, very fast, extremely technical, an absolute joy to watch on the ball. He's the kind of guy who picks up the ball in the middle upper front of the field and then just burns 3 defenders and slots it back. So he should be a lot of fun to watch. He has been reported by Ives Galarsep, for Soccer by Ives as one of the 7 players who was signed to a Generation Adidas contract, along with Frankie Amaya, Tejan Buchanan, JJ Williams, John Nelson, Siad Haji, and goalkeeper Dane St. Clair. So those are some names to keep an eye on at the Combine. Enjoy your Combine viewing, and Matt is going to turn it over with the end of show wrap because he's so, so good at it.
Listeners, you can follow us individually on Twitter at soccer_rabbi, at LWSMattPollard. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Rapids96Podcast for any of your hashtag AskHDHLs that are longer than 280 characters. Hit us up at Rapids96Podcast at gmail.com. I usually check that at least a couple of times a week. You can subscribe to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. Just check us out wherever you get your pod, wherever you find your favorite podcast. I'm in the process of making a long Twitter thread with all of the podcatchers that we are on and then followable links to them. Obviously, if you're listening to that, you've already found them, but I've been meaning to actually do that to say, here is all the places that I've confirmed that we are, that we update regularly, and all of the absolute links in the event that you are maybe an Android user who prefers something other than Google Play, for example, or you're an iPhone user who wants to use something other than the very clunky iTunes podcast app. With that, listeners, thank you very much for joining us. Happy New Year, and we will see you next week previewing the MLS Super Draft, where we're looking to see who the next Dominic Baggi or Nicky Jackson will be wearing the burgundy.
See ya!